True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Lundeen. Familicide is a term used to describe a type of murder where the suspect is closely related to their victims. They will usually kill multiple members of their family quickly. In many cases of familicide, the suspect will finish the rampage by ending their own life. I've lived in New Mexico my entire life, and this specific case has stuck with me because of the savage nature of the killings and the fact that they were committed by a 15-year-old boy. Around midnight on January 20th, 2013, a young man entered his parents' bedroom in their Southwest Albuquerque home at 2806 Long Lane Southwest. His mother was sleeping peacefully in her bed. The young man raised the rifle that was in his hand, aimed it at his mother, and shot her point blank. She died from the single gunshot wound, but by the end of the night, five members of this same family would be murdered by the young man. This is the story of the murders of the Griego family. My name is Eric Carter Lundeen, and this is True Consequences. Nehemiah Griego was 15 at the time he committed the atrocities on Long Lane. The Griego family was respected and well-loved in their community. Nehemiah's father, Greg, was involved in the leadership of his church, Calvary Chapel, and he was even a pastor at one point. According to family accounts, he struggled with drugs and gang activity after returning from the military, but he later turned his life around through his newfound faith. Greg was known for his volunteer efforts. He was the chaplain for the Albuquerque Fire Department. He volunteered at a local homeless shelter, counseled troubled youth at the Youth Detention Institute, and was known for taking mission trips into Mexico to help the poor and suffering. Sarah Griego was Greg's second wife and was said to be a homemaker, church volunteer, and a person who loved history and oldies music. She was always responsible for educating her kids as they were all homeschooled. This was done, apparently, to protect them from outside influences. Greg and his wife Sarah were raising their children at their home in Albuquerque's South Valley. The pair had a total of 10 kids, but I wasn't able to figure out how many of the kids were from Greg's first marriage. The Griegos were said to be extremely strict parents and even restricted the age at which their kids could date. Now, this in and of itself is not that unusual. But it becomes relevant as we dig deeper into the details of this tragic case. Nehemiah was born on March 20th, 1997. He was the seventh of 10 kids, and by all accounts, a gifted musician and naturally talented athlete. He was said to play the drums, guitar, and the piano. Nehemiah was described by multiple close contacts as shy, quiet, and soft-spoken. Family members believe that he was hoping to follow in his father's footsteps and join the military. He even has several selfies that he took while wearing camouflage, which he posted online. Nehemiah was heavily involved in his church and would volunteer to help in mission trips with his father to Mexico. You may be asking yourself, how did this seemingly shy and quiet young man become one of the worst perpetrators of familicide in New Mexico? The answer to this is not clear, unfortunately. And there were plenty of problems with the investigation and interrogation of Nehemiah. But before we get into that, let's look at the details of what happened on that tragic winter night 8 years ago. It's believed that prior to murdering his mother, Nehemiah and Sarah engaged in a heated argument. The details of this argument are not clear. It seems, though, that there was significant tension in the home. And as a result, Nehemiah waited for his mother to go to sleep and snuck into his parents' bedroom. He made his way to his parents' closet where Greg kept his vast arsenal of guns, and he grabbed a scoped .22 caliber rifle, walked over to his sleeping mother, raised the rifle, and fired one shot into her head. He woke Zephaniah and told him that he had shot their mother. Zephaniah reacted by crying and screaming loudly, which prompted Nehemiah to shoot his baby brother in the head, killing him instantly. The sound of gunshots reverberated through the house and woke frightened Nehemiah's sisters, 2 and 5-year-old Angelina and Jael. Nehemiah followed the sounds of their cries into their bedroom and executed the 2 young girls as well. It is believed that at this point, Nehemiah took out his cell phone and sent a quick text to his 12-year-old girlfriend, letting her know that he had murdered his family. With his siblings and mother dead, Nehemiah went back to his parents' closet, thinking that his dad was much larger and would need a bigger gun to kill him. He picked up an AR-15 rifle and went back to his sister's room and shot them once to test how loud the gun was. He made his way downstairs into the guest bathroom, which was across from the front door, to await the return of his father from his volunteer shift at the homeless shelter. Greg arrived from work at 5 a.m. on the morning of the 20th. He had no idea what was waiting for him or that his whole family had been brutally killed while he was volunteering. When Greg walked into the home, Nehemiah shot him several times in his head and torso. And once Greg was dead, Nehemiah loaded up the 2 rifles with ammo into the family's van and headed out to meet his girlfriend. Now, people have speculated that Nehemiah intended to go on a killing spree at Walmart after killing his girlfriend's family. But this did not happen. Instead, Nehemiah made his way to the church his family attended, Calvary Chapel of Albuquerque. He spent the day wandering around the grounds of the church. He then encountered the church security guard and former police officer named Vince. Vince spoke with Nehemiah and became concerned that something terribly wrong had happened. He immediately became suspicious of Nehemiah and suspected that he may have been involved in a tragedy. I'm going to play some audio from the police interview with this security officer. Let's take a listen.
Okay, I just wanted to basically tell me from the beginning of the day to...
Beginning of the day?
Just your involvement with this incident, yes.
About 8:30, I got a call.
Is that p.m.?
Yeah, this evening.
Okay.
From Pastor Justin. And I never get a call from them that late, but it was after service because I oversee security and safety for the church, mm-hmm. the Calvary Church. So I answered, and he says, Vince, you have a minute, and basically tells me the scenario, and he tells me that Nehemiah had told, Nehemiah's girlfriend had told one of the youth leaders mm-hmm. that he had found his family, found dead. And I said, what? What in the world are you talking about? I know Nehemiah, I know his dad. His dad used to be a pastor there. Mm-hmm. His dad's name is Greg. He was asked to step down as a pastor about 6 months ago for something he was involved in.
His dad, say the last name?
Greg Grego, yes.
Okay.
And he has his wife is Sarah. I think it's Sarah. And they have 3 small children who are deceased in the house, I guess. And I said, I tasked Justin, Pastor Justin, I said, what? Come on. I said, do you believe him? He goes, Vince, he's quiet and he's cold. And appears to be in shock. So I said, wow, okay. I said, what's the plan? I said, have you tried contacting Greg? Have you tried calling the house? He says, I've called the house. I've called the wife. I've called him. Nobody's answering the phone. So I said, let me make some calls. And I called Greg's phone. Didn't answer. Left him a message. And so I said, I'll tell you what. Just go have him leave the vehicle because he drove to a van in his van. Not his van. Nehemiah, who's 15 years old, mm-hmm. drove in the family van to Calvary, to the church.
Okay.
He doesn't have a license. Mm-hmm. He doesn't drive. So that was kind of 31 to me.
Right.
I said, have him leave it there. Bring him to Fourth and Montano at the McDonald's, and I'll meet you guys there, and I'll pick you up. I live in the Taylor Ranch. Mm-hmm. So I went and met him. And Pastor Eric showed up. He's the black guy out there. Mm-hmm. And... so we all jumped in my vehicle. I said, it's going vehicle for liability reasons, safety reasons. We're driving out there, and I'm talking to Nehemiah. And some of the things he was saying was a little 31. So at that point, I called you all.
What did you find suspicious about what he was saying?
He said he had found him 10-7 at 7 a.m. yesterday morning, on Friday morning. What's today, Saturday? Yeah, Friday morning. And I said, so did you think to call 911? He goes, I didn't know what to do. I panicked. I asked him, what did you see? He says, well, I walked in and I saw my mom. And then he thinks, and I'm watching him, and he says, because when he gets in the car, tell him, he's going to sit in the back seat. I said, no, sit in the front seat. I wanted to talk to him face to face.
Right.
I wanted to look at his hands and kind of keep control in case he was acting weird. Mm-hmm. So I asked him, I said, what did you see? He says, I found my mom dead, laying on the floor, and I found my dad dead. And then he thinks about it, he goes, and my little brother and sisters were upstairs in the rooms dead. Mm-hmm. And I said, so you're telling me, Nehemiah, that you didn't think anything suspicious? He goes, well, I know my dad has enemies from his back in his old days. His dad was a gang member in the syndicate, mm-hmm. prison gangs. He did some time. Changed his life around, became a pastor. He was actually a good guy. He was a chaplain in jail for a while, mm-hmm. at MDC. He had found him yesterday morning at 7 a.m. And he waits till night to report it.
Right.
And he didn't really report it. Mm-hmm. This kid wasn't jittery. He wasn't crying, no emotion. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I mean, I worked many, many homicide cases. This kid, there's something not right. Mm-hmm. Asked him, what did you find? Well, then, do you own any guns? He goes, I don't own any guns, but my dad owns guns. Mm-hmm. Emotionless. No emotion, just like a cold. So that's when I'm headed over there and I call you guys and say, you know what? So I took some flashlights with me, put them in my car, gave one to Pastor Eric. And I said, when we get there, Eric, we'll go in. I said, listen, Nehemiah, you're going to sit in the truck. And Justin, you stay in the truck and we'll go approach the house. Mm-hmm. If we see it, if it's true, we'll back out and call the sheriff's department. When I started getting closer to Coors and Ramac, I said, no, something's not right. So I pulled over and I called you guys and waited for you guys to show up at the house.
Okay.
So we didn't enter the house because I didn't want to anything that seemed 31 that we were going right. to ask with it. Because he said he picked up, I said, when you found him, was there any blood anywhere or did you see any guns? He says, I didn't see any blood. Are you kidding me?
Right.
He says there was a shotgun leaning on the wall or on the bed. Because he first said on the bed, then he said the wall. So in my mind, he's trying to think, remember where, to be truthful and remember where he put it. You know what I'm saying? And he said that he picked up some casings. And I said, what kind of guns does your dad own? And he said, my dad owns a shotgun, a .22 rifle, and a couple of handguns and a revolver.
So he said he picked up the casings while he was there?
So he picked up the casings and moved them. And I said, casings or was it the wadding from the shotgun? Or he goes, no, it was the casings. I said, okay. Just, trying to see where he was going and if he could lay anything out for me to tell me what really happened. Mm-hmm. And then he said, my dad has a lot of enemies from his former days. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, I know he knows some bad people, and I think they came back and there was some revenge. And that left it at that. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing else really said.
Right.
They had a halfway house in the back. Mm-hmm. Some people that when they get out of prison, when he was a chaplain at MDC, he would let people come out from God's pot and live with them in the back for a while.
Mm-hmm. All right. What was this bad beef that was with the other pastors?
Just that they had disciplined him, basically. Mm-hmm. He had made some bad choices, was complaining a lot. Basically, he was the chaplain at the jail. Mm-hmm. Was doing a great job. I mean, with the God's pot and all that, apparently. But the county commission, Brunswick County Commission, hired the female. Mm-hmm. It made it no longer a religious God's pot mm-hmm. thing for rehabilitation. They made it more like an AA. Mm-hmm. So they hired this girl, and he put in for the job. And they hired her instead of him. Mm-hmm. And he was real bitter about that. Well, Calvary started, it's a big church. It opened up a Santa Fe campus, Santa Fe Calvary. Mm-hmm. And because of his bitterness and his bad attitude, in a nutshell, what I understand is they moved him to Santa Fe to kind of be away from this. And maybe hopefully he could change his attitude. He'd mm-hmm. be the pastor out there. And he didn't like that. So he started bad-mouthing the church a little mm-hmm. bit. They put him on a six-month like sabbatical and told him, you need to straighten your act out. He didn't, so they booted him. Mm-hmm. So he's not real happy with these guys. That's what,
right?
Just the church in general with the pastors there. He's still been attending there though.
What kind of relationship did he have with his son?
Well, I understand that Pastor Lamb, the black pastor, mm-hmm. is a martial arts expert mm-hmm. in like five different disciplines. He used to teach his kid martial arts. Mm-hmm. He's Nehemiah. He was martial arts, but he said that they're tight. Mm-hmm. The son and the father were tight. Kind of a different family. He was the wife didn't drive. Sarah didn't drive. Mm-hmm. The daughter, Vanessa, who's here, she never drove. She's 23, 24. Mm-hmm. Nobody drove. He drove everywhere. He painted pretty much when you'd see Greg, his whole family was with him. Mm-hmm. And then they had some younger kids. And he was always with this boy. Always, always, always. He was in wrestling for a while. Mm-hmm. Between his junior wrestling. He was coaching him.
Where did Nehemiah go to school for wrestling?
His homeschool.
Oh, homeschool?
Yeah, yeah. I think he wrestled when you're homeschooled, you can, junior wrestling wasn't part of any school.
Okay.
It was just an organization. But I think the schools allow you to play sports even if you're homeschooled now.
Okay. Do you know if Nehemiah had any, he was like normal? Intelligence level or?
Yeah, he's a pretty sharp kid. The thing is with Nehemiah, he did say, I don't think I put that in my statement, he said something about, when he was talking to Justin, I was just listening to him in the backseat, something about he met, yesterday morning his friend dropped him off at 7 in the morning. I don't know who his friend is, he didn't mention his friend, but he went in the house and that's when he found his parents 10-7. His friend had left. Never mentioned who the friend was, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know the family really that well other than church.
What about Nehemiah's temperament?
Calm kid. Always calm. Mm-hmm. That's why when I saw him, it was kind of, he's calm, but he wasn't emotional. I mean, you find your parents 10-7, you're going to call 911 or you're going to tell somebody about it. He didn't tell anybody. He told his girlfriend. She told her mom, who told the pastors. Yes.
All right. Yeah. Do you know who his girlfriend is?
No, they do. I know that these guys do. The pastors do.
All right.
I mean, the kid I've volunteered and oversaw security there for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And I've never, ever, ever had a problem with these kids.
Right.
Ever. They're like never problem troublemakers. Mm-hmm. And Ben seemed to be disturbed, apparently, he went to the high school ministry. And if it wasn't for his girlfriend's mother mm-hmm. or grandmother, whatever, telling a pastor or telling somebody, he might not have said anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, who did you say seemed disturbed? Oh, he didn't seem disturbed, is what you said.
Yeah, he didn't, apparently, according to the pastors, mm-hmm. he didn't seem disturbed at all. And when I saw him, he didn't seem disturbed.
Here's an excerpt from the initial police report for this case. On January 19th, 2013, deputies were dispatched to 2806 Long Lane Southwest in reference to a possible homicide. The calling party, Vince Harrison, stated a juvenile, Nehemiah Griego, that attends his church, informed church staff that his family was dead inside his house. When deputies arrived on scene, they used a key provided by Nehemiah to unlock the front door of the residence. When deputies did a protective sweep of the residence, they saw a deceased adult male with a gunshot wound to the head in the living room at the base of the staircase. Deputies stated they also found two deceased females in an upstairs bedroom that appeared to have gunshot wounds to the head. Deputies then went to the master bedroom of the residence and saw a deceased adult female on a bed with a gunshot wound. There was also a deceased juvenile male with a gunshot wound to the head. Deputies then secured the scene and Nehemiah was brought to 400 Roma Northwest for questioning. After interviewing Vince, police interviewed Nehemiah. Here's some audio from that interview.
Enough. Enough of the stories. We know what happened. And I'm being completely serious. I want to help you. I want to help you get yourself out of this shitty situation you're in. What was going on in your home life. You need help. And you know it, right? I just want to know why this happened. What was going on, Nehemiah?
Just life stress, you know? Things from life, you know?
Right. Into it.
Yeah. I have been, you know, getting into fights, a lot of street fights, for no apparent reason. Since, you know, over years, you know, because my entire second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade were all fights.
Right.
And I had to fight every day, you know, just to make it, you know.
We want to help you through this. Like, I don't want to be the bad guy. I want to help you, Nehemiah. You're young.
Yeah, you're 15. We can help you as a 15-year-old. Okay. So you've been having lots of fights lately.
Yeah.
Lots of stress from it.
You know, a lot of natural responses up to not feeling spoke like a thought. My natural spot will be, you know, once something touches me, I want to hit it right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you know, I really start to feel a lot of hate. Because, you know, I did worship, play music, because you and I love playing music.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of had to hold my aggression back. By doing that, I kind of built a massive wall of hatred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was sometimes hard for me to talk to somebody or even hang out with somebody. And I became very depressed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking a lot of murders, suicidal thoughts, you know. I got into fights. Like, someone will just punch you straight up for no reason, just to build me back, you know, into the aggressive state.
So you're saying you're thinking about murder, suicide?
What happened at home?
Mm-hmm. What happened at home?
Sometimes the mom will argue with me, and I usually kick a cue off.
So what happened?
How did this one start?
I was downstairs, being a kid. And then, she starts complaining, I didn't do anything right over there. I thought, being completely honest, I apologize, she was out there, I do whatever. And
this is hard, man, but like I said, whenever you got that initial stress on your face, this will be that weight coming off.
Once we get through this, we're done. Okay? No one's going to come in here and ask you to say it again. Let's just get it out one good time, and we'll be done.
I'm being cuffed, though.
What's that?
I'm going to be in cuffs, though.
You're 15. We're trying to help you.
You even said yourself, you've been having these feelings, and this is a start to getting that fixed. Getting you help, man.
Someone who denies it and lies about it all the time, that's someone who doesn't want help, right? Someone who comes forward and says, I did something wrong, I need help, that's who gets help.
It kind of sucks being marked as a murderer,
You're a teenager, okay? You are.
Do you know how you... I don't know, that's why we want to know the why, what's going on with your life.
It's screwed right into hatred, I just started hating everything, I started hating everyone.
Were you and your mom downstairs when you started arguing?
Yeah, we, started arguing.
Was this Wednesday night? Was it Wednesday night?
No, it was Thursday.
It was Thursday night?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least 30 minutes before.
Okay.
Backed off, let her cool off, let myself cool off, play Call of Duty a little bit. And then I went upstairs, and I was watching TV, right? Because the only TV that actually works cable is in my mom's room. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that.
So she's watching TV. You went to play some Xbox, right?
PS2.
Oh, sorry, excuse me.
PS3.
Sorry. So then what?
You know, after playing, you know, Call of Duty, I can still, you know. Because every time I'm always in a happy mood, mm-hmm. my thoughts always come back to haunt it, you know. And turn you back. So, you know, I felt a lot of hate, you know. I wish I could keep myself controlled. Went upstairs to watch TV, and she started complaining again. About nothing this time.
And her, were you in her room watching TV?
Yeah.
Because that's where the cable was working, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, she started arguing, you know, I don't want to argue back. Because I don't want to be argumentative with people. You know. And she kind of pushed me to the point, so she fell asleep. I took the rifle.
Okay.
Where'd you get the rifle from?
The top.
So you were in the room with her, she fell asleep, right? Were you in your room when she fell asleep?
I was in her room, she fell asleep.
And your brother?
Yeah.
Okay. So you got the rifle from the closet? And what'd you do? Just get it out now.
Pulled it out. Pulled the trigger. Yep.
Where did you aim the gun?
At her face.
Okay.
I shot a second round, just to be sure.
Okay.
My brother woke up. You know, I told her that mom was dead. Right? You didn't believe me. I told her to turn her face over. Right?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, look. He was like, really? And then pulled the gun towards him because he was really gonna stab me this time. You know,
what did he do at that point? He said,
did he start to get upset that mom's?
Yeah, he started to yell, I think, and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And get real aggressive. Because he'll get real aggressive with me if I get him pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, I pulled it towards him and I shot him.
Or did you shoot him?
Yeah.
One time?
Which rifle did you use for this? The 22. And then what did you do after that?
I went into my sister and they were crying, but damn.
They were awake?
They're partially awake.
What time of night was this?
This was like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah, I already had it. I just couldn't sleep. I had a hard time sleeping.
So what'd you do when you went in your sister's room?
You know, I completely turned off my conscience. I really did. Yeah.
Right.
I just let the peace come out.
So what did you do then?
And I pointed the gun at them and I fired about a few rounds. Yeah.
Were they awake when you fired?
They're partially awake.
Did they tell you anything?
No.
No?
Who did you shoot first?
The older sister. And then I went back. And
where was your dad?
He wasn't home yet.
Oh.
He didn't come home until about 6.
You waited for him?
I waited for him in the AR-15.
Where were you at whenever you were waiting for him?
Bathroom.
In the bathroom?
Waiting for him to pass by.
Is the bathroom downstairs?
Yeah, there's two bathrooms, one upstairs and one downstairs.
Which bathroom were you in?
Downstairs.
Okay. So he came home?
He came home, right, you know, he didn't, you know, take off his jacket and everything like that. And, you know, I held the rifle and a good military stance.
Mm-hmm.
And I always showed him back, you know, walk by. And, you know, came out of nowhere and just, you know, shot about 4 or 5 rounds.
You didn't say anything to him?
How close were you to him?
So, like, he was over here with the stairs under that.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much over here.
Did he see you coming? He had no idea.
He had no idea.
How many times do you think he hit him?
Probably like 4 or 5 times. I got him shot.
Did you fire again after he was on the ground?
Yeah, I shot him. Got him in the face.
And what did you do at that point?
Hmm?
What did you do after that?
After that, or we reloaded most of the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I really started to get, like, really hateful.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's okay, man.
You're doing really good. Okay.
I actually got the shotguns. One was already loaded from the dead. I was getting out of my mode just in case. you know, and I placed it on the bed, and I was trying to load the other one, but I got my finger stuck.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, but, you know, I really got hateful and really suicidal by that point.
Mm-hmm. Were you going to take your own life?
No, I was going to go, you know, shoot random people and let the cops go in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I ended up just driving to the church and, you know, trying to smooth it out with my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell your girlfriend about everything?
Yeah.
So you told her what you told us, or?
I told her about the murder, sis. I had her light track around my belt.
Did you tell her that you did it?
Yeah.
What'd she say?
You know, she was a bit surprised, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she always saw me, and she saw me aggressive, you know, mm-hmm. towards other guys, but she always saw me as a sweet person to her.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So I hid it from her grandma.
How do you feel about this now?
I regret it in a way.
Do you regret it?
Yeah.
Feel bad?
Yeah, I think I should have. Yeah. Shouldn't put my head first. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
are you on medication at all?
No, I don't take meds.
Have you ever?
Have you been prescribed medication though?
No.
That you don't take? Oh, okay.
Have you taken any drugs or anything like that? Weed? Pills?
Were you drinking alcohol all the time?
No.
No?
I was fully conscious.
Have you ever thought about doing this before?
Yeah, I have before.
Have you ever done this before to anyone else?
Yeah. Yeah, I might beat people up. That's one thing, but you know, I never actually, you know, shot at somebody you killed.
All right. Is your mom the first person you ever shot?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a dumb question, but...
Yeah.
How do you feel now? Does it feel good to get it off your chest? Now we get you the help you need. Right? I'm glad you decided not to start shooting other people and make us come and confront you.
Right.
Because we don't want to live with that. Right? So I commend you for that.
We're going to take a quick break. And we're back. So one thing that happened during this whole thing is that Nehemiah and his girlfriend were exchanging text messages, both before and after the killings. So they talked a lot about Nehemiah's plan to kill their parents. Nehemiah even texted a picture of his mother and brother after he killed them to his girlfriend. He told her that he had killed his dad as well. They arranged to meet at Calvary Chapel that day, so let's look at this text exchange between Nehemiah and his girlfriend. On Friday, January 18th, Nehemiah to his girlfriend, "Let me see if my mom is asleep." He writes back, "She's still awake." He says again, he also said, "I know, I'll kill her in her sleep soon." He says, "Damn, I'm really insane already. I love you more than I love killing people. Okay, it looks like my mom might not go to sleep. She needs to, and she does look wide awake. Where do you want to meet when I kill my family?" She replied finally, "She needs to, and does she look wide awake?" Nehemiah replies, "Where do you want to meet when I kill my family?" She replied to him, "IDK, at the school next to my house on San Francisco and Barstow." Nehemiah, "How about the church? Once I kill my dad, I can get the car." His girlfriend, "Okay, that's nice. Hope he dies fast." Nehemiah, "Okay, he will." Nehemiah again, "I know, as I can kill my mom, my little brother won't be that much of a problem." The girlfriend, "Okay, knock him out is what you want." Nehemiah, "I'll just shoot him." His girlfriend, "Okay, what are you going to do with your sis?" Nehemiah, "Shoot them too." His girlfriend, "What are you doing?" Nehemiah, waiting to kill them. You? Nehemiah, I just killed my mom and my brother and my sisters. His girlfriend, really? Nehemiah, yes. Nehemiah, now I just need to wait for my dad. I can't believe I just killed them. Do you want to see the bodies? I just killed my dad. So, after talking to Nehemiah, police started to turn their attention on the other people who interacted with him and may have information into the murder of the Griego family. One of the people they interviewed was his 12-year-old girlfriend. Because she was a minor at the time of the police interview, I have elected to not include the audio of her interview. I will instead provide a brief summary of what she told police. To protect her identity, I will call her Brittany. Brittany was questioned twice by police. During her solo interview, she stated that she was very worried about Nehemiah. She was asked about text messages that police uncovered, which seemed to allude to a plan that the two of them had to kill her mother and grandmother. She claimed that she didn't have the guts to go through with it and that she would have stopped Nehemiah had he tried to kill them. Brittany said that right after killing his mother and siblings, he sent her a text message telling her what he had done. He also told her that he was going to wait for his father to come home so he could kill him as well. She said that Nehemiah told her this because his mom would not let him go to church that evening to see her. She was asked about the text messages they exchanged. She claimed that Nehemiah told her he was going to kill more people, but she told him not to. She also said that Nehemiah was going to protect her from a boy at school that kept touching her, despite her numerous requests for him to stop. Police brought in Brittany's mom and let her know what happened. Brittany continued to insist that Nehemiah was trying to protect her from his family. She claimed that Nehemiah told her that his dad threatened to kill him all the time. Her mom pressed her and asked if she was certain that this was the truth. At the end of the interview, Brittany asked the police to tell Nehemiah that he is always in her heart and that she loves him. Brittany's mom and grandmother were both interviewed. Brittany's mom said that she met Nehemiah at church as she started to go with her friend. Her mom claimed that she was aware of the relationship. She was okay with it, though, because she knew the only time that Brittany and Nehemiah spoke or hung out was at church. Brittany's mom also said that she didn't believe what Nehemiah was saying about the murders. Apparently, Nehemiah was telling his girlfriend that he was going to kill himself and that he didn't want to live anymore. When Nehemiah and Brittany were hanging out at a park, Brittany texted her mom to ask if Nehemiah could live with them. When the mom asked why, Brittany said because his parents are dead and he has nowhere to live with no food. She claimed that his parents died a month ago in a car accident. This caused the mom and grandmother concern and caused them to question what Nehemiah was saying. Joanne said that the first time she met Nehemiah, when she took him and Brittany to lunch after they were at Calvary. Joanne said that Brittany woke her up early in the morning and asked to be taken to Calvary. Joanne was nervous about the situation and continued to text Brittany to make sure she was okay. She then started to grill Nehemiah on the way to lunch. Let's listen to part of Joanne's interview.
It's Joanne or Joanna?
Joanne. J-O-A-N. Pronounced Joanne.
And White. Mm-hmm. Who all lives with you?
My daughter and my granddaughter.
Your daughter being Amanda?
Amanda.
So, when did you first meet Nehemiah?
Today.
Today was the first day. Okay. Today being Saturday?
Yes.
Okay.
Being Saturday.
And how did that come about?
He and my granddaughter were texting back and forth, and he asked her to be at Calvary mm-hmm. at 7:30 this morning.
Okay.
And I thought that was unusual, but, we agreed because I figured, well, maybe there is something going on. She said he had to practice drums or something.
Okay.
Drums, yeah. And so I took her down and dropped her off.
Okay.
I communicated via text a couple of times. I was leaving somewhere, and I said, I'm going to come get you. And 4 hours is enough to be down there.
Okay.
Not knowing, trusting that's where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And things. And then next thing I knew, he was standing out there with her. And I drove in to get her, and they both climbed into the car and said, well, we're going to go eat lunch.
Okay, about what time was that?
12 something. Too hard.
We're going to go.
Yes.
Go to the source.
Go to the source.
Okay.
Isn't that better?
That is. Guessing is not as good, right?
And she said she gave me a wake up call at 1:26 Saturday morning.
Who did?
My granddaughter.
Okay.
Gave me a text. So they were on the phone back and forth texting. And my daughter said something about talking on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Up until 2 o'clock in the morning. Wake me up at 7 and take me to the church at 7:30. Okay? And drop me there. And then at 7:58, I text her after I dropped her. Are there any adults in the building? And she said, yeah. And then I said, when I dropped her off, I said, now, I may pop back here any time, is what I left.
Right, keep them on their toes.
Keep them on their toes.
Good for you.
I mean.
We were all young ones, right?
Not like them.
Not like them, okay.
And, yeah, and then I said, I think I'll come hang with you.
Okay.
And she says, no. Why not? It's warm in there. Because it was early in the morning and stuff, and I didn't have anything per se. And she just says, because, where can I go? IDK, the house, and read. And I said, no. I said, okay. This was just after. And then about 10:06, I text her and said, what are you doing? Hanging with my BF. Then about 12:01, What? I'm sorry I missed your call, because I tried calling her. And then at 2:30, and that's about a little after that's when I picked her up. I think I talked by phone.
Okay.
And told her I was picking her up and stuff. I think 4 hours, and I just said, okay. And then he came with her.
Okay.
And she'd already warned him I'd do the 20 questions. So
it was about 2:30?
No, it was around 12.
Oh, it was around 12 that you went.
12. Yeah, 2:30 is when she texted me saying, can Nehemiah live with us? His mom and dad died, and he has been living alone for a while. And I go back and say, where are you? And no. And she says, at Cherry Hill Park, and please, he got nowhere to go. I love this text language.
Yes. Well, you're doing quite well with it.
Where are you going? This is tonight at 6:28. At about 6 o'clock, I waited until I finished a movie on TV, because I knew church was at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he was supposed to. From early conversation, that's where we're supposed to be going.
Okay.
And she always goes on Saturday night.
Okay.
And so I said, we took a little conversation between him and I and her, and she said she didn't want to go. And I said, he said, let's just go. So I said, I'll probably sit with you guys in Velocity. It's got to be better than the main program. And so they went over to Farside and said, it's fine, I'll sit over here, just as long as I keep you in my eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, so it was just fine. She gets that way. So as long as I can see her, I don't care. In the meantime, when we walked in to the place, Jason, I think it is, he was the guitarist tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not good on him.
It's okay.
You're Kyle.
Yes.
Thank you. I said, I don't know, He said, well, Nehemiah, you're supposed to play with me tonight. I've got your confirmation here on my phone. Okay. Nehemiah was supposed to be at the church practicing at 7:30 on drums this morning.
Okay.
And everything. So And I thought, you know, nothing. That's, you always practice before service anyway.
Right.
I mean, I'm heading services, so I know what goes on there. But, and so the guy said, that's okay. I just do it without you.
It's okay.
I had asked him this, kind of said something was something, you know, from conversations earlier in the afternoon. I said, something's not up. He claims he drove down here on his permit this morning on his own. And I'd questioned him at lunchtime.
And who are you talking to now?
Nehemiah. I was talking to this Justin or, well,
Jason. The guitarist?
Yeah, the guitarist.
Okay.
The guitarist. We'll leave it at that. How's
okay.
that?
Okay.
Because I know the pastor that came and talked to him was Justin.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a Johnny there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first talked to him, I said, just something's just not up. He's, my daughter and I both said, no, he's not spending the night. So, or anything, because, well, it just isn't right.
Right.
And my granddaughter kept insisting. We went ahead and did. Let me back up. I asked him 20 questions at lunch and stuff and everything.
I'm sorry. Give me one moment. Hold that thought. I am interested. Hang on. What's that? So you said at lunch you asked him 20 questions. You're giving him the run.
I want to know who he is. Where do you live? And he said, oh, the South Valley. Around, what are the roads around there?
Mm-hmm.
And that was awful vague, giving me the roads, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, I really expected the direct address.
Right.
And what are the cross streets and things like this. But he said something about Old Kurz and, I guess, Raven or something.
Okay.
Because I don't know. And I said, well, what high school would you go to if you weren't going to this military school here in town? Because my daughter's granddaughter had said, excuse me if I crisscross granddaughter and daughter.
Not a problem. I'll ask if I'm not sure.
Said that he was in a military school. He's going to military school and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He had his the khaki pants on and stuff. And looked like, yeah, you know, haircut, and was acting like he was under, you know, attending something like that. And I was trying to get out, well, where's the location of it? You know, exactly. Where is this military school and stuff? And, you know, trying to get an idea. And he couldn't give me the address or the name of the school. I thought that was odd.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and what high school would you be going to if you weren't going to the military school? Because with APS, he said Albuquerque High. And I said, you know, that just didn't sit right. If he lived in the Southwest Valley, I knew better.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the new high school that's down there, and it would be Rio Grande
mm-hmm.
or West Mesa. So, this didn't. And he's talking about his grandpa and World War II and an aunt or an uncle in Vietnam serving in the military and things like that. I said, you can ask me any questions you want. And I couldn't tell him where my dad had served in the Navy because I couldn't remember per se.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. And we just kind of just, you know, talked. But he wasn't very talkative. And he wasn't. It bothered me because he was talking, but his lips or his mouth, he just wasn't talking to hear audibly
mm-hmm.
real easily. Didn't just normal observance.
Right.
I mean, when they were sitting in the back seat of the car, I could hardly hear him talk. It's like he wasn't opening his mouth to let the sounds out.
Right.
Because you always separate your teeth or do more movement. I didn't get enough. But so we went through the 20 questions and all, and I said, now, where are we going? Are we taking him back to the church or whatever? And they said, no, we're going to hang at the park. We've got the school, Dennis Chavez, across the street.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's where, but then she met Cherry Hills Park, which
okay.
is where they were. And stuff. So And I asked him a couple of questions. He said, oh, my parents were killed in a car accident a few days ago or something.
So he said a few days ago?
That's what he said.
Okay.
But he, and then somewhere along in there were some times about a month that he'd been on his own or out on the street. And he said, well, the neighbors around me are taking care of me. I'm just living at the house on my own. And stuff. That's what he said when they came back. Well, why do you want to stay here? You know, that type of thing is what I was told. I said, well, when's the services? What funeral home? I said, well, and then he made the comment, you're getting a little too personal. So I kind of held off on that and stuff, but I insisted we go to church and everything. And so I called him up. And before my daughter had said something about, she had seen a picture on my granddaughter's phone about him having shot his leg or something,
mm-hmm.
and all. My granddaughter's crying a few days ago, and my time frame can be off.
Okay, a few days ago.
Yeah.
All right.
I kind of said, I went up to go look at behind a little screen area where I could see them, but they couldn't see me. And of course, my granddaughter texted me and said, she asked, where are you going? This was at 6:28, getting a program. Oh, okay. And so I'd asked him about it, everything. Service hadn't quite started, and this girl was there, so I said, let me have the guy that's, you know, over there. So I kind of said to him what I was concerned about and all, and about the picture my daughter had told me about that was about the having shot his leg or some few days back. And so I did that. And then the guitarist, after all the singing, about 6:55, came up and said something to me, and so I got up, and we went outside to talk, and he said he knew his brother-in-law, and I didn't realize he had brothers and sisters or anything at that point, because I didn't ask that type, and they said they were getting the pastor, Justin, to talk to him, and we'll meet you at the car. I said, meet me at the coffee shop. Right. And her comment was, his mom won't let him date till he's 18, or comments like this and stuff. Doesn't want him to have a girlfriend or whatever, which still doesn't sound right.
Right.
But some parents can be strict on that.
Thank you for listening to True Consequences. This episode was written, produced, and edited by your host, Eric Carter Londine. This concludes part one of the Griego family murders series. Stay tuned for part two next week.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one man show, please go to patreon.com/True Consequences. Thanks for listening and stay safe, New Mexico.